Yes, thank you. My name is Andris. I'm actually mostly known from my Node.js email protocol libraries, like NodeMailer and some other libraries. Basically, if you use some kind of like email client or that uses Node.js or JavaScript or Cloudflare email workers, then probably there's some kind of my library in the stack somewhere, usually. But today I'm talking about one of my biggest projects. It's called the Wildduck email server. It's slightly similar to Stalwart, and it's also, when I started it like quite a long time ago, it's probably in 2016, so it's quite old. But it's not very well known because it's I've been mostly building it for one single company. That's just some quote I came up with. It means that we email is basically today's world, it's like our digital passport. It's like commonly known. If you like sign a document with DocuSign or some other platform, then you are identified by your email address. So it's even though it's not meant to be and it's not a digital passport, then in reality it is. So the services that are using email are like evolved quite a lot, but the email infrastructure itself usually is not so much. So in this like presentation, I'm not trying to advertise Wildduck and suggest how to use it, but it's more like a lessons learned story or why is some design decisions were done, how they were done. So. So it's mostly used by this one single Estonian company. I'm also from Estonia, from Tallinn, and it's a web hosting company that uses it. There are more than 100,000 active accounts, and if you do the math, and the average of minimum say quota per account is 12 gigabytes. So it's if you multiply 12 gigabytes with 100,000, then you get quite a large number, more than 1,000 terabytes. So obviously not everyone is using all the like space that they have like available, but in today's world nobody is deleting their email anymore. It's just moved to some archive folder or wherever, and so it means that mailbox sizes are like constantly growing and people are reaching their quota limits. Yeah, and in addition to this, the company uses a custom webmail client built on top of Wildduck API. This webmail client is currently not open source, but I hope it will be, right now it's not. Actually the problem statement or where the roots of Wildduck like come from, why it is built like this, are in the history of the good old LAMP stack. Before we had like all these cloud hosting providers, there were like tons of smaller LAMP hosting providers, the Linux, Apache, MySQL, and PHP, so it's something where you would just put on the hoster WordPress, for example. Thing was with these kind of providers is that the packages were usually quite cheap, like $5, $10, or euros. The main business was this like website hosting. But in addition to that, usually the companies, the hosting providers also provided email accounts. And at first, it was just a giveaway, basically. It was cheap to maintain for the companies because the Mailbox sizes were very small. If you've been around, then you maybe remember that even Hotmail had a mailbox quota size 2 megabytes. So that's not one email, that's not one attachment, that's the entire mailbox. So all your emails had to fit into 2 megabyte disk space. So and it's not too like difficult even in back in these days to host these very small mailboxes. You don't put a lot of emails into this disk space. So 2 megabytes is like an extreme example, but 10 megabytes was like quite common, I would say. And maybe later it was 100 megabytes, but it was still like really small. But once Gmail came around and suddenly free email had very large quota sizes, then people started demanding more, and now the web hosting companies had this issue that they were still getting this very cheap hosting plans, like $5 or $10 dollars or euros, users demanded larger mailboxes, but they were not, they didn't want to pay for this. So they basically wanted this service for free. But providing the service was not so cheap for the hosting providers anymore. So, so it's this is kind of the back history of how WildTech came to be. It's basically an attempt to quite cheaply provide more or less normal mail service to users that do not want to pay for it. And I think details. And here's some additional problems as well, with MailDir, especially, we already saw the MailDir information in Stalwart's speech as well. The main problem with MailDir is that it's all your emails are in a single folder, and so it gets really difficult to, if you have a large number of users, then it gets difficult to provision disk space for host these users. Let's say you have 1 gigabyte of quota for one person, one user, and you have a 1 terabyte disk, then it means that you can put 1,000 users into this disk. But usually users have used less, let's say maybe on average 100 megabytes, so it turns out that you have this 1 terabyte disk, but you only use 10% of it. So 90% is unused, and so the providers to cut cost, they would oversell it, and instead of selling this same terabyte disk to 1,000 users, they send it to 10,000 users, let's say. But now, sooner or later, you start to hit the limits, and the users' mailbox do not fit into this disk anymore, and you start, you have to start migrating to some other, just install a new mail server and migrate a bunch of this MailDir folders to this new server, but MailDir means that each email is a separate file, and if you have 1 gigabyte mailbox that you need to migrate at once, you can't just migrate it partially, but everything needs to be moved at the same time. Then there might be maybe 10,000 or 20,000 files in this folder, and you have maybe have to migrate 100 users of this. So it end up that you have to start copying millions and millions of small files, and even though networks are fast, then moving small files is never it was too fast. So it's gets very really tricky, and you have to do it all the time. All your if you go to this kind of hosting providers Network Hack, then you could see that the lights are always blinking because the results there's so much small file moving around. So it's very complicated. Other problems is that the configuration changes, the standard software uses configuration files, and which means that if you do something like add an email address alias to some user, or change their quota or whatever, you have to reload the process. But if you have like a large number of users, then there's always someone who's changing something. But you can't like just constantly keep reloading the like the post fix or the dovecot or whatever. So what is the solution is that you just wait a bit, maybe 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, and then do the reloading, and then just all the changes apply at once. Which is like highly inconvenient because if the user adds like an email address alias, he like submits the form, and now the alias still doesn't actually work because it takes 5 or 10 minutes until the server configuration is reloaded. Some other problems is like the spam fighting. Just at first, nobody didn't do anything about it, but then it's just full-time job. Somebody has to like keep an eye all the time what's going on with like the spam situation. Really bad visibility, just log files and queue files at best. And one of the worst problems, IP blacklisting, that if you have a large number of users, then there's always some bad apples there. And if someone just sends out a spammy email and your IP address gets blacklisted, then nobody from this server is going to send any email, at least for a while, which is not great. Yeah. And so Wildtalk was meant to like fix these issues. There are no single points of failure. Each component can be like replicated, and if anything comes down, then one of these components, then nothing actually happens. You can just set up a new process somewhere. It's also horizontal scaling, and you can just add new instances, and you don't have to like migrate users. You just the main thing here is not Wildtalk itself, but the database, because most of the work is done by the database. And also instant changes, all changes are done via API, so it's just if you add a new alias or change quota, then it just applies immediately. And also this storage and API driven, but I'll just get into it real fast. And now it's Wildtalk is somewhere, sometimes the laughing stock, because it uses MongoDB as the email storage. It might not seem very reasonable, but it is. it's well long time known that databases are not good for email. But using MongoDB is different. The MongoDB itself, why I chose it was back in 2016. It was all the rage. Everybody used MongoDB back then, and also one of the like two good like reasons was that the MongoDB is there's a backing company, because we were considering between MongoDB and RethinkDB. And RethinkDB has been gone like for years, but because MongoDB had a backing company, then it's still around and works quite well. And the main issue with MongoDB is that it stores documents in like not like table rows, but like documents, and this naturally fits the MIME tree structure. Because in Wildtalk, when an email comes in or is uploaded, then it's parsed into a MIME tree and stored as a like tree structure and not as the raw email file. This is like normally you would in MailDir you have this store these EML files in like each folder. Mail folder is an actual folder on disk, but in Wildtalk the message is parsed and stored in like this structured form. So what it makes like really easy to do is build an API on top of it. So the Wildcat KPI is actually just a really thin wrapper just on top of MongoDB. You ask for a like message and there's obviously some like permission checks, but in the end you just get almost a raw database record from the database, and it's just structured JSON. So it's just returning emails from storage is like extremely cheap and fast. And there's also a lot of storage optimizations because when email comes in, it's old, it's structured, but attachments are taken out of it, of the email structure. So the attachment usually in an email is base 64 encoded. So Wildcat takes out the attachment, decodes it into like normal binary file, and then deduplicates it against the attachment storage. So if you have already the same file stored in the database, then we do not store the same attachment second time. One place where it's like helps a lot are like footer signatures. There's usually some kind of logo or something, and these kind of emails can be in millions. So instead of storing a million copies of some logo file, we just store one copy, and just all the other emails just reference this one copy from the database. So it's like this three-level optimizations. And this below, it just describes how we keep track, how we use attachments. The problem is that when we want to delete an attachment, then we want to make sure that it's definitely not referenced by any email anywhere. Because MongoDB is not a relational database, so it's kind of difficult to keep track what uses what. So we use this kind of magic counters just to keep track of it. But I'm not going to very deep into it because I don't have much time. That's the same thing. The third level compression that I didn't talk about was that WireTiger compression that also applies. So when we get the base 64 attachment, then first we decode it into binary file, then we deduplicate, and finally it's stored as a compressed file. Another thing that we did is that we used custom hardware. So we set up this setup where we had this smaller SSD disk and a larger ACD disk on every MongoDB server instance. And the point was that we structured the MongoDB storage in a way that all the main database was mounted to the SSD, but the attachment contents were mounted to the way cheaper regular database. And in this way, as we had like MongoDB cluster with several copies, we did not need to use any like RAID or some other kind of guarantees that the disks are working. It's all stateless, so you can just the point is that you can connect to any Wildcat instance and that's it, because it doesn't matter which kind of instance you're connected to. Maybe just one thing to mention is that we use basically flooding. So it's when you change something in an email, for example, mark it as read or add a star to it or whatever, or delete it, then we float the entire cluster with this information, and if the same user is has a like active session in some other server, then it gets notified with this, and we use the Redis poop soup system for the flooding. That's the API thing. Yeah, that's the, we don't have to reload the system anymore. And also, it's just an example that making a, like a IMAP client on top of like actual IMAP server is way more difficult than just fetching JSON from the server, which is coming extremely fast because it's coming straight from the database. And also we can, as we control the entire stack, we can use like modern authentication systems, especially in the webmail client, where we can use the passkeys and whatever. And maybe just, yeah, also notice this is that we can also, we have really good visibility into everything what is happening in the mail cluster, so we can just see from which geographic location someone is logging in, or even more important, which geographic locations are trying to log in to different kind of users account, for example, just to find out that if someone is attacking the like logging system, or all kinds of different kind of events that happen, because everything that happens is sent to the like Graylog server, and Graylog server just can show it like in a nice way. And we for just to maintain another like related project is Zone MTA. It's that we also built and use for sending emails. And this is the difference with like Postfix is that it uses outbound queue. So we can just, if one sending server gets blacklisted, then we can just take it out and all the, and identify the person who sent the spam. So we can disable it and just route everybody else's emails to the some other MTA server. And you don't have to worry that this specific IP doesn't work anymore. There's the, yeah, the, yeah. And just to finish it, what worked is that MongoDB fits quite well the MIME tree. Having everything stateless is a huge win because we can just really easily replace, upgrade, for example, stuff. Yeah, and the disk savings cost, like decreases costs. But the main problem is that as the database is really large, like hundreds of terabytes of data, then it gets quite difficult to tune this kind of database. And also, I'm a protocol as endless edge cases, which so each email client can make some really weird commands. Yeah, that's it for me.
I see that you're not storing the raw MIME, you're decomposing that. As an IMAP client, I need the original MIME. For example, what do I do if I want to verify a digital signature? Am I getting a byte for byte the Oracle back?
You are getting
the MIME tree?
Yeah. The question is that basically decompile the email into structured format, but in a lot of cases we need the original email back. So the answer is that in most cases you will get the same email byte to byte, but not in all cases. Because when we take the email into parts, then there's some data loss involved. It's very little, but it's still there. So we, for example, in TKM validation, we just do all the validation beforehand and store this information with the email. So when you make the API request to get the information about the email, then you get also the authentication validation results. That this, but if you would try to replicate it, then in most cases you would get the same result, but not in all cases.
unobtrusive email signatures that I can sign without encrypting, and then I cannot verify anymore. It's broken, right?
Yes.
That was the same question.
Yeah. Okay,
I want to continue the question. What will be this forwarding of such emails? Because on forwarding, you continue the same headers, Dekim, for example, and the Dekim signed the body and headers, and if on reconstruction of base 64, you have different base 64 structure. I honestly don't get right, but okay. If this is the case, then the Dekim signature will was applied. It's not valid anymore, right?
Yeah, the question is about forwarding and keeping the integrity, I guess. In forwarding, the everything works because the email decompiling happens when we store the email, but forwarding happens before it. So we get an email, we see that it matches some kind of forwarding rule, and we just forward the email, and that's it. And it's the original email byte by byte. But when we store it on the disk, then we do the decompiling, and after this, you don't do any forwarding anymore. Yeah. Search is handled by MongoDB built-in text search query.
Okay. That was really fast. Any otherwise, thanks again, Andrew. Yeah.